SBS in deutscher Sprache.
Und damit begrüße ich im Studio ein Fußballkenner aus Victoria, Roy Hay. Welcome to SBS, Roy.
Thank you, Krishna.
Sie sind von der Deakin Universität in Geelong, ein Social Scientist, ein Teilzeitjournalist und ein Buchautor und sind seit 42 Jahren in Australien. Sie haben unter anderem auch einen Artikel geschrieben über Rudi Guttendorf, der legendäre deutsche Coach, der kürzlich verstarb im Alter von 93 Jahren. What can you tell us? Was können Sie uns erzählen über diesen Rudi Guttendorf? What can you tell us about Rudi?
Well, I described him as a comet. He was certainly the most flamboyant coach that the Socceroos ever had. He saw them playing in Germany when we qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 1974 and thought that this would be another stopping off point on his peripatetic career, which took him to, 55 different coaching appointments over his lifetime. So he arrived here and began coaching in the late 1970s. He had a focus on youth. He was determined to make the game Australian and get it into Australian consciousness. In those days, the game was highly dominated by people who are recent migrants from mainland Europe after the Second World War. And it had this reputation of being a wogball or a foreign game, even though it's got as long a history as Australian rules or any of the other codes. And he set himself to try and break that mold and to develop a new generation of young players. The only problem was he was spectacularly unsuccessful when he was coaching the Socceroos, because normally the Socceroos won the Oceania Championship by beating the Islands and New Zealand. Only on this occasion they failed against New Zealand, and New Zealand went to Spain in 1982. And Rudi resigned, probably resigned before he was pushed. And so his coaching career in Australia was very brief indeed.
Ja, er hat also die Qualifikation verpasst für die Fußball-WM-Endrunde in Spanien 1982 und das kostete ihm das Amt. Ich finde es sehr interessant, was Sie vorhin gesagt haben. I find it very interesting what you have said before about that he didn't want to import, as he said, rubbish from overseas. He called it a crime against Australian soccer and local talent. Und ich habe da ein Zitat von Ihnen aus Ihrem Artikel von Rudi Guttendorf. Er sagte, "Our aim must be to show the public that soccer is not a foreign but a local and international sport."
Precisely.
Aber yeah. Letztlich ist er ja gescheitert. Ultimately he failed. Why?
Well, I, you could say it was bad luck as much as anything, because there were only he only had to beat New Zealand effectively to qualify, and I suspect that some of his players took New Zealand a little bit lightly. There is a lovely photograph which we used in our history of football in Australia, of Murray Barnes, the Australian captain, shaking hands with Steve Sumner, the captain of New Zealand. And Murray is a bit laid back and smiling and so on. And Steve Sumner is gritting his teeth. He is absolutely serious. And you must never take New Zealanders lightly. Australians learn that to their cost. And I suspect there was just a little bit of that mentality there. In terms of the quality of the players, there's no doubt that that generation of players had enormous talent. And it was a good mixture of youth and experience that he put on the field. But as you know, the ball is round, and in any one or two games, you sometimes don't get the result that your level of quality, if you like to put it that way, should bring about.
Mm-hmm. Sie sagten vorhin, dass Rudi Guttendorf, ich glaube, 55 national oder sonstige internationale Teams gecoacht hat in 32 Ländern. Das ist ein Guinness World Record. Mhm. Und Sie sagten auch, dass er ziemlich flamboyant war. Also, he was, and I'll quote you, one of the most flamboyant coaches that the Australian national team has ever seen. That's Wie meinen Sie das? How do you mean flamboyant?
Well, he was a showman, and he was a promoter of the game. I mean, he did everything he possibly could to get people on side, to bring youth through. I mean, the next generation of Australian national team players owe a great deal to Rudi Guttendorf. He took them to China and put them through training in difficult circumstances with a view to sort of bringing out the conditions that they would have faced if they'd gone to Spain. And he did have a lot of foresight about the way the game could develop. Unfortunately, he never got the chance to put it into practice. And you get the feeling that you know what Napoleon said about generals, you know, give me generals who are lucky. You know, I think poor Rudi was very unlucky in what happened. Perhaps he was to blame. The coach always gets it in the neck if the results aren't good. We've seen other coaches brought into Australia from overseas who also fell at the last hurdle. You think of Terry Venables, who over a coaching career of immense success couldn't get Australia past Iran in that game in 1997. So Rudi is not unique in falling over at the last hurdle.
Mhm. Er hat ja 49 Jahre lang Teams gecoacht, 2003 zum letzten Mal, und es waren auch ganz exotische Teams darunter. Viele würden sagen Australien, aber auch Teams wie Nepal. And what are some of the other quite unusual teams he trained in those 49 years?
Well, it's hard to know where he didn't. I probably could list more. It's easier to tell you the clubs he didn't coach. But he coached not at the top levels in Germany. He coached, I think he had time in China as well. I certainly have a photograph of him on the Great Wall of China, but I think this was with the Australian team. I made a rude remark about how that was a better defensive wall than he was able to erect. But he coached in several European countries. I think he had a spell in America as well. But as I say, it's easier to tell you where he didn't coach than the number of countries that he coached in. I think 55 was the number I've seen. I don't know whether you agree, but that's about the number of coaching appointments he had over a very long lifetime in the game.
Das ist in der Tat die Nummer, die im Guinness Book of Records genannt wird, und er ist damit Weltmeister im Coachen von unterschiedlichen Teams weltweit, die höchste Anzahl in den meisten Ländern. Er hat ja mit Schalke 1969 das Cup-Finale erreicht im DFB-Pokal, und er hat auch mit Australien immerhin eine wichtige Trophäe nach Hause gebracht, nämlich 1980 der Oceania Federation Nations Cup. He won that in that year, however, I think the competition was quite meager.
Yes. Unfortunately, this was the situation that Australia faced, because most of the island nations at that point who formed Oceania were really at a level below Australia. I mean, some of the most one-sided games that Australia has ever been involved in. The famous occasion when Archie Thompson scored 13 goals in one game. That's one player in a huge defeat of
American Samoa, is that right?
American Samoa, yeah. It was one of these tournaments that effectively you had to beat New Zealand and perhaps Fiji and you would come out on top. And Australia, I don't think in the time when Rudy was coach, had really come to terms with what was involved in qualifying regularly for the World Cup. I think after 74, we sort of believed that we would do that every time and took it for granted. We didn't manage in 78, and therefore the expectations in 81, 82 were very, very high. But as we found out thereafter, it wasn't until 2005, 6 that we managed finally to qualify, when we had what was effectively the golden generation of players, nearly all of whom were playing in good quality leagues in Europe and therefore had a, if you like, a finishing school at the top level. They came up against the Lionel Messis and the Cristiano Ronaldos and people like that, and therefore realised that these were flesh and blood and hence potentially matchable or even beatable. Now, in 78 and 82, we weren't at that level. There were one or two players like Eddie Krencevich who were playing in Europe, but he was a pioneer at that point. And so most of the players came from the Australian domestic competition. So it was a shock to the system if they came up against quality European teams, which they did usually during the close season in Europe, when touring teams would come over here and play a couple of games against the Socceroos. But that was really the only chance we had to play at the level that we needed to play in order to have a guaranteed chance of qualifying.
Ich spreche mit Roy Hay, ein australischer Fußballkenner von der Deakin University. Er ist dort Social Scientist, außerdem Buchautor und Teilzeitjournalist und das seit 25 Jahren. Seit 42 Jahren, 1977, lebt er in Australien. Er ist 79 Jahre alt und kommt ursprünglich aus Schottland, Roy Hay. Und wir sprechen über Rudi Guttendorf, der deutsche Coach, der kürzlich verstarb im Alter von 93 Jahren. Wahrscheinlich hat auch geholfen, probably it helped also, that the World Cup is now contested by 32 teams, so it's much easier to get into the final tournament. Ist damit der Platz von Australien quasi garantiert für alle Zeiten? Does Australia now have a permanent ticket to the World Cup because of this enlargement?
No, I don't believe that for a moment. I think the Asian countries are going ahead by leaps and bounds, and we have done very well in the last since 2006. we've qualified every time so far, but it's become tighter on each occasion. The last time round, qualifying for Russia in 2017-18, we had to go to a playoff round against a team from CONCACAF to qualify. We didn't qualify automatically, and I think it is going to be extremely difficult to qualify in future. And I think, to be fair, the Australian Football Federation Australia is aware of that and is doing as much as it can. But at the moment, we don't have that cadre of players playing at the very top level in the European leagues that we had with the last generation.
Why not?
Partly, I suppose it is a matter of the generations. It's very few countries that manage to maintain a uniform high level. They tend to be up and down. I mean, who would say that Belgium and France would be the top countries in the World Cup in Russia? Germany has had for it a bit of a relapse from its normal high standards. I mean, when you think in 2014 they took 7 goals off Brazil at home, you know, it was just extraordinary the kind of football they played on that occasion. So I think the fact that we don't have a full cadre of potential socceroos playing at the highest level in Europe, we have some quality players, but they're not all knocking the door down for selection at the moment. We may get back to that point, but I think it's extraordinarily difficult to do so.
Welches ist für Sie die beste Nationalmannschaft zum gegenwärtigen Zeitpunkt? The best national team for you at the moment?
At the moment? It's hard to go past Belgium at the moment. I mean, I think they're a wonderful team to watch. The French are obviously very strong as well. But I get the feeling that they're a bit more brittle than the Belgian team. I really quite like watching Belgium play. I have to say that with a heavy heart because they've just beaten Scotland very heavily twice. So, you know, it's not as if Australia has come up against them. What I'm disappointed about, I think, at the top level is how the African countries, which seem to be producing brilliant players, have not been able to produce brilliant teams to compete at that level. Some of their individual talent is extraordinary, but I don't know. They haven't yet got teams that are threatening to win the World Cup.
Maybe they need somebody like Rudi Gutendorf to coach them.
It could be. Somebody with his vision, somebody with his enthusiasm, his flamboyance, his ability to promote the game. Yes. Whether it's a question of discipline. You know, when you have a highly talented squad, getting them to play together is the critical thing. And if there is a strike against Rudi in Australia, is that I don't think he managed to get the best out of the national team as a collective unit. But who am I to criticise him for that?
Ja, es gibt auch den Vorwurf, dass es 2 Rudi Gutendorfs gab. Einen, der vor die Medien trat, in der Öffentlichkeit, und einer, der in der Garderobe der Spieler ganz andere Devisen herausgab. You have written about that yourself, in the sense that you quoted him as saying, "My aim is to mold a successful, aggressive and offensively minded soccer squad." Und dann hat er aber in der Garderobe ganz anderes gesagt, nämlich he instructed defensive and long ball tactics in the dressing room. Mm. Is that true?
I mean, I'm not privileged to know what went on in the dressing room. I have talked to players who played in that generation, and as an outside observer, I always wonder about coaches who are excellent motivators, but their tactical nous is sometimes questionable. And I asked this question of Ricky Herbert, for example, who played in that New Zealand team and who came to Australia recruited by Tommy Docherty from Scotland, who was actually coaching in Sydney Olympic at that time. And I asked him, you know, was Docherty just a motivator? And he said, no, he knew how to set out a team and get the best out of them. That's a question I never was able to put to Rudy. And I wish I had been able to do so. At that time, I was simply an academic. I wasn't writing about soccer, so I didn't have any privileged access when he was the national coach. So it's really ignorance, Christian, that I can't say. It's a question I might ask some of the survivors from that generation, now that you provoked me with it. What was he like at setting out a team and getting the best from them? When I reflect that his immediate successor was a fellow called Tony Bodgy, a Maltese lad who got much better results from the Australian teams in terms of wins and losses in the next games. Was that because Rudy had got the team to a certain pitch and then Bodgy got the benefit of that? Or was it because of something that Bodgy gave the team? I don't know the answer to that.
In dieser Zeit, als Rudi Guttendorf Coach der Socceroos war, 1979 bis 81, da hat seine Mannschaft ja auch gegen Clubmannschaften aus Europa gespielt, was ich ziemlich ungewöhnlich finde, dass ein Nationalteam gegen Clubmannschaften spielt. Das waren Teams wie Partizan Belgrad oder AC Milan oder auch, und da wird es interessant, die New York Cosmos, da hat nämlich ein gewisser Franz Beckenbauer damals gespielt. What can you tell us about that encounter?
Next to nothing, unfortunately. I really don't know. I mean, that was an extraordinary period when Beckenbauer was at the Cosmos. It was, I suppose, the time when the Americans tried to embrace the game. I mean, they had several goes at it before they created the current National League.
And they had Pele before they had Beckenbauer.
That's right. The Cosmos came out to Australia and played on occasion. So they were almost the Harlem Globetrotters of soccer in many ways. They did have a period of, the league had a period of success. The Cosmos were an outstanding group. But as you know, the league didn't last all that long. And it really wasn't until the 1990s that America, first of all, hosting the World Cup in 94. I also think the success of the American women had a huge impact over there. And then they managed to get a league. And I think this is something that we should learn in Australia, that it took the Americans the best part of 20, 30 years to get a functioning national league with strong domestic players and a competent national male team. but compared with their women, they weren't at the races. And similarly with the Japanese, it took them quite a significant time to get the J-League up and running and effective. So perhaps we are a little bit overcritical about Australia today, where its national league is, the last book on it described it as a tumultuous decade, and that was certainly true of the first 10 years of the national league. And I think we've got another 10 years before we can say that we've got a competition that will year on year generate players of world quality to compete at World Cup level.
Wunderbar, für viel mehr reicht's leider nicht. Roy Hay, Sozialwissenschaftler, Teilzeitjournalist und Buchautor von der Deakin-Universität in Geelong. Ein Fußballkenner, wie Sie gemerkt haben, einer, der Rudi Guttendorf zumindest begegnet ist. Also er hat ihn nicht persönlich gekannt, aber er war mit ihm in einem Raum. You were with him in one room, you said previously. Und das hat ihn dazu befähigt, uns ein bisschen Auskunft zu geben über diesen legendären deutschen Coach, der kürzlich verstarb im Alter von 93 Jahren. Und noch einmal, Rudi Guttendorf hat einen Weltrekord im Guinness Book of Records. Er ist der Coach mit den meisten Positionen, the most coaching positions, 55 in den meisten Ländern, 32. Eins dieser Länder waren die Socceroos, Australien, zwischen 1979 und 1981. Roy Hay, vielen Dank für diesen Besuch. Thank you very much for this visit.
Thank you, Christian. It's a privilege.
Wenn du kommst und auf einmal wird ein Schloss aus meinem Zimmer. Gestern hab ich dich gesehen und alles war wie immer. Dann fiel mir auf, ich kenn dich gar nicht. Dann fiel mir auf, dass ich lieber gar nicht bei dir wär. Dann fiel mir auf, oh, mich langweilt dein Gesicht. Dann fiel mir auf.
Weitere Podcasts in deutscher Sprache bei sbs.com.au/German.